DMT World presents The Rambling Rabbit, and I am its host, Happy KB. Hello, friends. Welcome to another episode of The Rambling Rabbit. This, I believe, is episode 10. Wow. 10 episodes. I've got so much coming up too that I've got a bunch of content that I am still going to be able to put out there for you guys. So I'm really, really excited that I've been very inspired to stay on this and keep doing it. It's getting more fun and more fun as I do it because it's easier. It's getting easier. I'm getting a little bit smarter in certain avenues, I must say. You know, I work in a facility in my day job where I work from templates all the time because, well, you're always doing certain things, correcting stuff and everything. And so it's so easy to have your template on hand that, you know, you just use those. Well, I am not sure why in the beginning of all of this I was not putting templates together, but I have many templates now and it's just making my production go a little bit faster. So that's good. Some of the electronic and technology stuff is coming together even better for me. I may not have the high quality stuff, but I got things that can get me through and I'm very happy about that. So feeling real good about where I'm at with doing the podcast. And of course, I feel really good because I know that there are a lot of you out there that are listening to it. And that is the biggest, that right there is the biggest inspiration. Again, I don't sometimes, in my brain, it doesn't make sense to why anybody would really want to listen to me rattle on about stuff and talk about things, and I don't know, it's interesting, but I do know you guys are listening, and I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart, because this is what keeps me going. I didn't think I would enjoy it as much as I have. In fact, I was told once upon a time, by Alex, our last podcaster, you know, he kept telling me, I need to get you on. I need you to get you on the mic. They need to hear you. They need to hear what you have to say. And I always just think it was crazy, but whatever, it's fine. But here I am, I'm in front of the mic. And so you get to listen to me ramble on about all kinds of things. Whether you find them important or not, I'm just going to do it anyways. So, with that being said, again, I want to just thank you all for being out there in the listening land and lending me your ears for a few hours or so, or however long I can sit here and talk. So that's great. With that, I would like you to please subscribe to this channel, like the video. It helps. I'm trying to build up our audience and utilizing the YouTube more, and we've got a lot of things planned that are coming up that there's going to be more content on there. So please share this, like it, subscribe to it, help me out, get me out there, help us get us out to the other people in our psychedelic community, especially. We want them all. We're all a part of it. We're all doing this together. So it's very important that we're supporting each other. It's very important that we're recognizing each other and we're helping each other out, because that's what we do. We help each other out. So again, subscribe to the channel, like the video, and share us. Tell people about us. With that being said, if you are new and you haven't either heard this podcast or you haven't even been to our website, we have a DMT World, which is a psychedelic social network that I am one of the admin. I'm also the podcaster and person doing the podcast at this point in time. But I want to welcome all the new people we have had, because we've had such the influx of new people coming on, and it's really, really exciting. Lots of activities happening. If you have not been to DMT World, this is where I want to invite anybody and everybody that's listening. If you have not been to our website yet, come and check us out, see what we're doing. It's at www.dmtworld.net. It is free to join. You get on, all we ask, we do not do any data collecting. There is no outside advertisements. There's none of that stuff. We do everything. I have staff, and it's me and a few other people, and we do a lot of things by hand. We have great accounts. We're in the mix with everybody. We're not just sitting on the outside watching people. We're actually involved with what's going on. But like I said, it is. It's free to join. You do not have to put any money out to join DMT World. I mean, many, many people who are there. We've had about, or I think about almost up to 29,000 people that have actually, whether they are active or not, have actually signed up and checked out the website. And, you know, that's half of it. What makes our community so good is the vibe. And even if you've come one day or you've come and you've stayed the whole 4 years, your vibe is helping create, has been injected into this community, and it's helped building what we're doing here. It's great. It's wonderful. So again, if you've never been to DMT World, I invite you now, please come and check us out and see what we're doing. www.dmtworld.net. There is one thing I need to let people know that have not been on the site before, and even if you are on the site, I want you to remember when I tell you there is no illegal sourcing that happens on DMT World. It is something, if that does occur, then it does ban you and you're no longer part of our community. And we don't like doing that. I do not like to ban people. But there is no illegal sourcing. We are governed by the U.S. federal government and their laws, and that is how we keep our site safe, up and running, and keep the people on there as safe as possible as well. So just, we can't do that. There are other places, there are other platforms on the internet. You can do all that business. Just keep it off my site. That's all I ask. With that being said, what has been happening? Okay, so like I said, we're at episode 10. Well, the episode before this was an interview. That interview was with Aminaro, which was really interesting and fascinating. I met him he's been in our community since 2019, roughly. He's been with us for the long haul. And he's a therapist. He's works in the psychedelics in his career choice. He has lots of experience. He loves talking to people. Reach out to him if you have questions or concerns, or you have questions about anything. Like, he is very knowledgeable, has a lot of experience under his belt. It was really fun to sit and listen to him talk about maps, going to the convention. I think that's really wild. And, you know, just the vibe that was there and the people he got to meet. I think that was great. I think that's what I want to hear about. I'm not making those trips yet. And I hope in the future to be able to go to more things like maps, conventions, and stuff like that. But I'm not to that point yet. But I love it when I get to talk to people who have been, who are making these trips, are going to these things, finding out what's happening in the community, and sitting and chatting about it, because this is the only way that I can find out about and know much about it. So I really appreciate the time that he spent with me on that interview. It was so fun. I could sit and just talk to him hours. We just have so much to talk about. I find that with everybody I'm interviewing. You know, when I first started this, I thought, how on earth am I going to sit and talk so long? You know, why would anybody want to listen to an hour? At first, I was like, why would anybody want to listen to 30 minutes, let alone an hour or so? But you know what I'm finding when I'm doing the interviews, that I just want to sit there and keep talking to them. 2 hours never seems long enough. I don't feel like I've gotten enough questions out or talked enough. But if we did it that way, the interviews would be like 6, 10, 12 hours, a couple days. We might have to. I've been brainstorming about all kinds of stuff on other types of things that we can do with this podcast to involve even more people. I like doing my solo bits, just getting some stuff off my chest, or just telling you guys about things that are happening in my brain, or, you know, just whatnot. I have these moments in my car. I'm not sure how I'm going to capture them, but I have these moments in my car where I'm at a stoplight, or I'm doing something in my car, and I had to reach over and pick up something. I'm sitting in my car and I find that I get to thinking about, oh, if I was sitting in front of my mic, this is what I would want to tell the people. Oh, and things start coming to my brain, and I'm sitting there and I'm starting to like have these podcast conversations, like my solo ones, in my car, and I think, I really need to have a microphone or something in here. But then I'm like, that's not healthy for you, Karen. Like, Kiwi, you have to make sure you're paying attention to the road and not worrying about the podcast. So, who knows? You might get some car ones. I don't know. Future, you never know what the future's going to hold. But I will make sure that I am safe and that I don't put anybody in danger trying to podcast while I'm driving, because that just seems a little ridiculous. But anyways, that's how that goes. But no, I really enjoyed that interview. I've enjoyed all the interviews. Everybody that has been so kind to accept the invitation to the Rambling Rabbit, thanks, guys. It means a lot to me. It means a lot. So, with that being said, I do have several more. Like, my calendar is booked for the next, I don't know, once I get back from my trip. Like, I've reached out to several people and asked them if they wanted to be a guest on the Rambling Rabbit. Blah, blah, blah. I talk so fast at times that it just kind of mushes together. But I have. I've reached out to these people and I've asked them if they wanted to, you know, I wanted to extend an invite to be on the show. And they've all come back and they've all said some very lovely things and are very excited. And I think they're more nervous. Everyone's like, I'm a little nervous. I don't exactly know what I'm going to say. Well, you don't ever have to worry about that, because I will talk. I will keep things moving along. And it's fun because it's so neat to get to... One, to hear people's voices. So for 4 years, you know, I don't like to talk on the phone. I really don't. I don't like to talk on the phone. Running conversations is getting really hard at times. Just, I don't know what it is. But what I've enjoyed the most about the podcast is that I've sat behind this computer for 4 years, this screen, my phone and all these things, and have developed friendships and got to know people, but I have never heard any of your people's voices, really. A lot of you guys all talk to each other, and I don't. I don't have a lot of conversations with people in the community, not because I don't want to. I mean, it's not a thing that I did. I always kind of just kept things at an arm length and messaging, and I don't know. It's just something. The phone and talking to the phone is just kind of a thing that always just never really appealed to me, especially as I got older. High school, totally different. I was on the phone all the time. You can ask my parents, but they always grounded me from it, because that was the way to punish me, because nothing else mattered. But as I've gotten older, talking on the phone is not something that is my favorite thing to do, but I'm finding the podcasts and getting to interview people are great. And the whole reason is because I have all of you guys' voices in my head, but it's not really your voices. So, like, I'm always very pleasantly surprised when I do get to hear your guys' voice, and then I can put that voice in my head to the name, or it's fun. It's very fun. It's like getting to know you guys a little bit more than I do just with the interactions we have on the side. So it's cool. And it's cool that everybody is very willing to participate and be a part of this. So thank you once again. I really appreciate that. So we talked about the last interview. So I have this next interview I have ready here after I get done with this one and post this one up. And that interview, I sat down with a shop boy the other day, and we finally, after trying to figure out time zones and when we have some time to sit down and talk to each other and, you know, what day it is in Japan, what day it is in Kansas. And once we got that all ironed out and figured out, we sat down and had about a 2-hour conversation. And it was very enjoyable. It was fun. It's still kind of hard to wrap my brain around that, you know, he was in tomorrow and I was in yesterday, but somehow we met in the same moment on the internet. So that was fun. So that's the next interview that will be that I will be posting after we're done with this episode. So, and like I said, I've got so many more interviews lined up. So I've got some great stuff coming at you, and we get to hear each other and figure out what we're all doing. And there's so much happening right now with the legalizations and the decriminalizations and the news coming out of the East Coast and the news coming out of the West Coast. And it's all just, it's very exciting. And I'm very happy to know that we have so many people all over the world that I can talk to that can give me insights on what's going on. That's one of the one thing I like to know the most. Like, what are the laws? What are the legalities where you're at? Like, that helps, because since we are a network, a social platform, and we have people all over the place, you know, it is very hard sometimes to make people understand, you know, what our rule actually stands for and why we go by it. And legitimately, it's just because every state, every country, every place is different. All the laws are different. And in the United States, it's very, very hard with the states and how their laws are, and, you know, what's legal in one state, it's not legal in another state, and it's just, it kind of gets hard. So that's also why, you know, we abide by the U.S. federal government and their laws, that way nobody gets in trouble. But I do, I like to know what's happening in the forefront with the decriminalizations, and what that means, and what that means for consumers, and what that means for people like us in our community, and, you know, how people play a part in that, and what the benefits are and everything. So if I have asked you to have an interview, like, those are things that might come up in the conversation. So I never want to put anybody on the spot and them not know, but I will probably ask that question just because I want to know what's going on in your area when it comes to psychedelics. So that's just a thing. I like to know where I'm legal and where I'm not, and therefore where I'm traveling to. I know what kinds of things I can be doing, kind of like going to Michigan. I now know that, like, you know, this is... it's going to be strange tripping and being able to trip because it's legal. Like, it's something I won't get in trouble for, like, if I was here and wound up being here where I live now. So it's kind of exciting. I did want to let you know, we're putting almost every other day, or at least we're trying to put new stuff in the merch store, on our spring store, and got a new shirt that came out that says I'm with Swim. Everybody knows who Swim is. So I think it was great. It was a rework of a shirt, of a design that when we first started was in the process. And I was given permission to redo a little redesigning on it and get it back into our merch store. So we revamped the design and it's back in the merch store. You can get it in white and black. Black shirt, white lettering. You can get it in the reverse of that. I've also put many different colors in the merch store. That way you can get it green, red, blue, purple, you name it, whatever. So it is there and it's available, and the shirt is $25. So please, please, please go check out our merchandise in our merch store. It is, if you go to www.dmtworld-2.creator-spring.com, it will bring you right up, or you can go DMT World Teespring and it'll bring you up there. You can also visit our site. We have a group that is the merch store that I'm always posting the products in, with links to them, so you'll be able to find them easier that way. So go and check out our merch store. Everything that's in the merch store, all proceeds that will go, they go back to our site. So they help out the site. So just so you know, check that out. With that being said, let's talk about our Patreon and donations to the site. We're now to the point where we're ready for some upgrades. We're ready for some new stuff that's happening. AI is on the forefront. AI is, there are tools, not the straight up, but there's a few tools that are in our upgrades that are AI based that can be very helpful. So there's some new stuff in our upgrades for the website, upgrades for the app. We need to get those done. If you are not a Patreon donor, that is how we keep our lights on, by the community helping us with donations. That's how we power everything. Everybody that is on staff and admin does this for volunteer. Nobody gets paid to do this job. There is no money that comes to any of us. We just do it out of labor love. But with that being said, we do need donations. And donations go towards maintaining the site, upgrades, adding some new perks. We do have two different donation tiers on our Patreon. One is a $5 merchant tier, and the $8 one is our Psychonaut tier. The $5 merchant tier is exactly that. It allows you to have access to the marketplace, so therefore you can sell and put product in their legal items in the marketplace, and that way you can make a little money selling your things on our platform. The $8 Psychonaut tier is a tier that will help. It does allow you to be a merchant in our marketplace. It also gives you the ability to open a group on the site. It allows you to get some DMT swag. We have a necklace and some stickers that you get once you donate. It gives you access to the Psychonaut channels in our Discord. And it will also qualify you for the new Psychonaut giveaway group. That is a private secret group that's on the site that you only can be a part of if you are a Psychonaut $8 tier donor. If you would like to donate one of those tiers, you just go to www.patreon.com/DMTWorld, and it should bring you up to that. If you're not wanting to commit to a monthly donation payment on the Patreon, there is an area where you can donate for the year. And then there is a link that I'll have to go look and find it. That is if at will, like if you want to donate something, but it doesn't not necessarily tied to the Psychonaut status or the things like that, but you have a little bit of money and you want to just donate to the site to help us keep things going. I will post that link on the website, and that is another way that you can help out DMT World. Again, like I said, this is all everything that everybody that works and does this for DMT World, we just do it out of a labor of love. We like it here. We like you all. We want to make sure we get to be here and you guys get to be here. So, if you're able to donate, please do. It does help. It helps greatly. So that is that. So I want to tell you just about some of the stuff that is coming up. Okay. So first things first. I'm getting ready to make a trip to Ann Arbor, Michigan, on Sunday. Let me pull this up. Sunday, September 17th, at 11:11 p.m. through 4:20 p.m. There is a festival called Ethnofest that is going to be happening, and wow. I will make sure that I post a link to this as well. Basically, what this is a gathering of speakers. We're going to have several different, there's artists there, there are speakers, we've got some, there's a state senator that's going to be a state representative, a state senator. We've got some therapists. We've got people who've been working with these plant medicines and psilocybin and all these things for a long time. And these are the people that will be there talking about the benefits of the plant medicines and the ethnogens. There will be artists there. The lineup itself, if you ever go on to look at this, is amazing. The sponsors that they have that are help sponsoring this is amazing. Like, I'm just, there's a lot of medical facilities, a lot of therapy facilities, a lot of mushroom companies. Like, the list is amazing. And when I post this, I hope you all go check this out. You know, the Michigan Psychedelics Association is going to be there. Michigan MICO. I don't know if anybody has ever heard of Michigan MICO. They're going to be there. I mean, the list just, it goes on and on. Wellness centers, the mushroom and mycology. I'm baffled. I'm very excited to see all this and how they do this and what's involved with this, because I'd like to maybe next year, since we have some people up in Michigan, see if maybe we can make this trip again and like maybe be a sponsor of this, because I think that would be fantastic to be a part of this. So this is one of the things that I'm doing. I'm going to go and see what they're doing, see how they're doing this. I want to know about the laws. I want to know about all those things that make me question intentions and make me question the directions that things are going. I need to be exposed to people that are doing it, that are in this part of it. And I think this is just the perfect thing I needed to go do. I have my camera person with me, and it's going to be fun to watch her videotape and take pictures and capture it all on film. That will be fun. And once we've done that, then we'll launch it. This will be the first episode of KB's Caravan. KB's Caravan will be a series that will be a video series that is done and will be posted on our YouTube channel. This will basically, KB's Corner is to go and do and see things that are going on in our psychedelic communities, and also getting to see and meet people that are in their community. This trip, I am going to get to go and meet Patchnoy Roy, aka Claptrap, and his lovely wife Potassium. So those two people, I'm very excited to see and meet them, and then they're going to be go to the fest with us. If there's anybody else in the area in Michigan on the 17th, come down to the University of Michigan and come to this and come see if you can find us. I would love to meet anybody and everybody who possibly can. If you can make it, come join us. We'd love to have you there. We'd love you to be there representing DMT World. This way I'm hoping that we can become, you know, people get to see us and find out about us, and then, you know, we get to find out about them, and maybe we can do some helping of self, you know, cross promotions, them promoting us and us promoting them and getting them in our community, and we are part of their community. So again, if you're in Michigan or around that area, September 17th at 1:11, come and join us and come to the festival with us. It'd be fun to have you there and get to meet you face to face. So that's where I will be on that day, just so everybody knows. Should be a really, really fun time. So if you are wanting information on this, you can go to ethniofest.org, and it will bring you up to their website, and it should give you all the information that you need. It will tell you where it's at, the speakers that are there, the sponsors, and how to find them. So just so you know, that is a thing. And I have never been to Ann Arbor, Michigan, and so I'm really looking forward to this trip to see what we can see. So that is that. That is what we will be doing on that. I will let you know that if anybody, I have a GoFundMe out there for KB's Caravan to help keep, if anybody feels that they've got a little extra money and want to donate to help me fund the KB's Caravan. I got enough donations to help get me some train tickets so I could go up to Michigan. And so those people that have helped me that way, thank you so much. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. That was very generous and thankful. So, but I do have this GoFundMe. If you're wanting to donate to it, I will have the link down in the description of this video. A little bit, it all helps. Like, good vibes, little bit of money, whatever. If anybody has any ideas for the KB's Caravan, other places we can go, give me ideas. I'm all about it. You can send me an email at kb@dmtworld.net, or you can find me on Discord under Happy KB, or you can get on DMT World and you can find me there under Happy KB. I'm always taking, you know, ideas and inspiration. I've been kind of thinking towards my next episode, and I think I have an idea where I want to go. I'm not exactly sure, but I'm actually thinking of going to the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors. Part of my reasoning is my daughter is the person who is my camera person. And one of the things she wants to do is she wants to travel. So, you know, she just graduated high school and we're 18. We're able to go do whatever we want to go do. So we were going to go and do some traveling, and we're going to go see what we can see. And the fact that she wants to help me with doing this KB's Caravan and being my video person, because it's fantastic. I think it's wonderful. So I want to go do some cool things and show her some cool stuff. So I've kind of been looking into the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors, and I think that would be something that would be really neat. They do have an event calendar that I've been looking at to seeing if maybe we can catch one of their events that they do, or one of the classes, or just something. And I know there are several people that live up around this area. Wappinger Falls, New York. So I do know that I've got some people I can reach out to and maybe connect with them and do a KB's Caravan and get to meet up with some of them and see them. So that's what's on the plate that's coming up. Like I said, if anybody has any other ideas or has some other places they think would be cool, or you're like, I want you to come visit me, let me know. Let me know what we would do, or where we'd go, or what kind of ideas you have. I'm always open to that. So you can send me an email at kb@dmtworld.net. You can find me on Discord at Happy KB. You can find me on DMT World. My name on there is also Happy KB. So if you've got some ideas, shoot them my way. I will let you guys know that I am still doing this Tick sticker campaign that I mentioned when we first started doing this podcast. I'm slowly but surely putting some stuff together. I've gotten quite a few pictures from people, but I want more. So if you would like to be part of the sticker campaign, send me a message, email me, Discord me, message me, let me know that you want to be a part of this, and I will send you a few stickers. All that I ask is that you put the sticker up somewhere in the places that you're at, that you live, that you reside at, and tell me the basics of where it's at with the picture. That way I want what my idea is. I want a visual of how far DMT World goes in our world. Like, we're all over the place. Here in these states, Europe, we're everywhere. We've got Japan, we've got Australia, you all are everywhere. So let me send you some stickers and get me some pictures, and we'll do that. So that's one of those really, really cool things. So now we're at the point in our podcast where I'm going to do the rabbit tales. And I was looking around and reading. I read a lot of different media. I read a lot of articles, especially in the psychedelic world. I was on the Navy Times, and I was reading some different stuff on the Navy Times, and I came across this article that it was titled, "This guy wrote a short story about a carrier sailor's tripping on acid, and it's glorious." And so I was reading through this article, and it's talks about this guy who, his name is John Frame, and he wrote a story, a short story, exactly that, about a bunch of guys on a carrier who decided to take some acid. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start reading this story for you, because I think it's quite interesting, and I think it kind of goes along with everything we have going on here. So the title of this short story is called The Confrontation, and it is by John Frame, F-R-A-I-M. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but that's what we've got there. This was copyrighted 2018, and then, let's see, we're going to jump right into this. This says, this story is inspired by a true story. Ronald Reagan LSD probe bigger than you think. 14 nuke sailors snagged. Navy Times, November 6, 2018. All right. First chapter is Captain Harrison. Captain Harrison sits at the desk in the captain's quarters reviewing messages on the big computer screen. He's in his early 50s and in excellent shape with a lean, hard body and a jagged face. The face has the weathered features of a face chiseled and earned over the years rather than given at birth. It is an early morning, but he has been up a long time thanks to the call from the Secretary of the Navy at 3 a.m. this morning. He has spent half an hour in his exercise bike, pushing himself as he always does. He wears a gray t-shirt, damp with sweat, and a pair of blue navy shorts. The captain's quarters are neat, clean, and efficient, with a simple color theme of gray and blue. It is nothing special, and might be the room of some motel along the interstate. Next to the computer screen is a telephone system with the number of lines coming into it. Captain Harrison is multitasking, scrolling through messages on the computer screen, listening to messages from the phone system and making note on a pad of paper. Above the desk is a shelf with photos of his family and a young boy and girl and a pretty wife. A long, high window on one side of the room lets in an early morning sunlight that falls in a slant into the room, placing a slice of light on the captain's head. There's a knock on the door, and Harrison says, come in, without looking up from his work. His top assistant, Lieutenant Justin Bates, enters carrying a breakfast tray with the daily briefing memo on it. He puts the tray on the table in the room and hands the memo to Captain Harrison. This is the way each day officially starts for the captain. The Pentagon wants us to continue towards the Chinese fleet, Lieutenant Bates said, but at a reduced speed of 20 knots. Give us more time to plan options. Options are disappearing fast, the captain says. There's little indication the Chinese will back down, Bates says. I've been in the contact with our people in D.C. They'll have more information later today. What the hell did the Chinese think we're going to do when they block the South Korean trade with us? Captain Harrison says. Bates points to the memo. You've got a staff meeting and call at 10 this morning with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of the Secretary of the Navy. Don't remind me, the captain says. Captain Harrison sits at the table and eats his breakfast, while Bates sits in the chair at the captain's desk, pokes at his smartphone, sending text messages, reading emails, and listening messages. Anything more on the drug bust last night? Harrison says, raising from the table and walking into the bathroom. Well, nothing more to report now, Bates says. 10 crewmen in custody. Our NCIS is on it, but I called in the FBI specialist. FBI Special Psychedelic Unit. We can't take a chance with anything like this right now. There is the sound of the shower in the bathroom, and Bates carries the empty tray outside the captain's quarter and hands it to Ensign Derek Street, a large, tough kid from a farm town in Alabama. He likes Street, and the two always discuss football. The Tide's going to win the playoffs, Street says. No one can touch them. Wait till they meet LSU, Bates responds. Your old school doesn't have a chance, Street says. Bates smiles and shakes his head. He likes their football banter. Lots of talk now, Lieutenant, Street says. The ship's always full of talk, the lieutenant says. It wouldn't be the ship if it wasn't full of talk. I mean, the situations keep getting more tense, Street says, with the Chinese Navy staring us down and all. You just worry about staring down the captain's door, Lieutenant Bates says. I want you to not let anyone into the captain's quarters while he's away from them. Not even the daily cleaning people, Street asks. No, Bates said. That's a direct order from me. I want you to report to me if any of any suspicious activity. Anything. Street is somehow surprised that their daily football talk has taken a different turn. Anything wrong, Lieutenant? Street asks. Nothing for you to worry about, Sailor, Bates says as he goes back into the captain's quarters, sits at the captain's desk, and scrolls through messages on his cell phone. In 5 minutes, the captain emerges from the bathroom in full uniform. You think the drug problem stops with just those in custody? He asks. That's the big question, Bates says. I wish we knew. I'm interviewing them this morning with our own internal investigators and the FBI team that arrived last night. We should know more this morning. We better know soon, said the captain. We're just a few days from being face to face with the Chinese in the East China Sea. All I need is a crew filled with drugs. The two leave the captain's quarter and walk quickly down the long hallway with rooms of other top officers on the doors. Here and there, crew members pass and salute the captain. They enter the elevator that takes them up to the main hangar deck. I spoke with the Secretary of Navy, the captain says in the elevator. He called and got me out of bed at 3 o'clock this morning. He's more than a little concerned that the nation's largest nuclear aircraft carrier has hallucinogenic drugs on board right in the middle of one of the biggest showdowns in Navy history. The door of the elevator opens into a large man-made interior ever created. It is the staging area of the carrier, right under the flight. The opening of the elevator door should almost have some symbolic significance. Before, we have been living in the small room of the captain of a great warship, walking down a narrow passageway full of officers' quarters, then into a small elevator. When the doors of the elevator opened into the vast space, it is like a cart crashing into a great funhouse. We got from the enclosed claustrophobic environment of the inside of the carrier to the grand landscape of the hangar and the flight deck. The captain and Bates walks across the vast landscape of the great room under the flight deck. It is a larger than convention center. There is much activity going on at 7 o'clock this morning. Jets are being inspected and worked on. A little truck are moving through and around like those little trucks at the airports. The jets sit in a long line a few football fields long. The captain is saluted a number of times as he walks through the deck. So, we still don't know if we're dealing with an internal drug problem or some terrorist acts, the captain asks. No, says Bates. There's a lot of people trying to find out this right now. Jesus, said Captain Harris. I'm used to fighting all types of battles, but never anything like this. It's a new situation for sure, Bates says. They came to a great open elevator on the side of the ship that lifts the airplanes into the flight deck. The operator crewman salutes the captain, and the elevator slowly rises to the flight deck. There's a jet on the elevator that sparkles from the morning sunlight. The elevator stops in alignment with the vast flight deck of the nuclear aircraft carrier. The captain and Bates step off of it and walk across the flight deck. The carrier is the last to be built and featured the latest technology of the nation. Pilots are checking their airplanes on the deck, and there is a wave of them off at 8 this morning. There are more salutes to the captain as he walks across the vast flight deck of the carrier. They walk in silence for a few seconds across the great flight deck of the carrier. The eastern sun is maybe 20 degrees above the eastern horizon. It has a strong orange and red color to it this morning and puts these colors into the ocean to the east like the wide swath of the orange-red rusted junk into the ocean. The two men come to the bottom of the great bridge on the aircraft carrier. It rises above them like a miniature skyscraper 20 stories tall. On one side of the structure is a giant block letters, LSD, for President Lyndon Stuart Dodge. The captain stands looking up at the great letters of LSD 100 feet above him. What an irony, the captain says to Bates. I always knew the meaning of these letters, but now they're the perfect call letters for my ship. The captain briefly thought of all those times in the past years when friends had tempted him to try acid, and all those times he had declined. He had smoked marijuana, but had experienced no hallucinogenic drugs yet. It had always been an irony that the captain, to command a ship, with the letters called LSD. He was simply stating to Bates that he had thought about it before. Two enlisted men stand at both sides of the elevator to the bridge of the carrier. They saluted the captain and Bates as they get on the elevator that goes up the side of the bridge. It slowly rises. Out the window, they can see the surrounding ocean on both sides of the carrier. On both sides of it are the back a few miles are the battleships and destroyers and guide missile cruisers and support ships. The Lyndon Stewart Dodge is leading the fleet northwest across the Pacific towards the Chinese Navy in the East China Sea. The door of the bridge elevator opens to a vast semicircle space with a long curving windows and two men at two great wheels. The room is busy with personnel. On the side of the room, crew members look at a radar screen. A machine continues to download printed materials. Small monitors are everywhere. A view of the vast Pacific Ocean in front of the ship as the carrier pushes east towards South Korea. Chapter 2. The Spiked Coffee. As soon as the captain is on the bridge, he receives his daily large cup of coffee prepared with the special requirements by his kitchen staff and brought it to him the past week. Since they left Pearl Harbor heading to the East China Sea, by Ensign Billy Rogers, the captain and Billy had gotten to be good friends in the past. They will chat a few more moments after Billy brings the captain that important cup of coffee. It has even gotten the name in the folklore of the carrier as Bridge Sledge. But this morning, Billy Rogers is not serving the coffee, but another ensign. "Where's Billy?" the captain says as he takes the coffee off the plate. "In sick bay, sir," the server says. "Oh, I hope he's okay," the captain says, but the server already is disappearing into a door off the bridge. The captain watches him go as he sips his coffee. Strange little guy, that captain thinks. With the large coffee cup in hand, Captain Harrison huddles with his top officers. None of them are aware of the drug problem on the ship. It is not time to tell them about this new situation. There is more than enough to worry about with the Chinese Navy, not more than 1,000 miles away. There is a speculation as to what the Secretary and Joint Chief will say on the call coming at 10 o'clock this morning. Who will back down? Will there even be a back down? Lieutenant Bates pulls the captain aside from the huddle. "I'm off to meet the FBI person and interview the crew members we have in custody," he tells the captain. "You need to go to the bottom of this and quick," the captain says. "Don't think I don't know," Bates said, leaving the bridge. Captain Harrison is next to his second-in-command, Executive Officer Captain William Benjamin. They both stand directly behind the crewmen steering the great carrier. The two have known each other since their days at the Naval Academy, where they played on the Navy football team. They have been best friends all their lives, but they are very different from each other, in some ways, almost symbolic opposites. Tom Harrison was always the straight shooter who never strays from the boundaries, but Bill Benjamin hardly ever stayed within the boundaries. On both sides of the carrier are the destroyer escorts, and behind them, the other ships in the fleet fading into the eastern horizons of the new day. I want to tell me more about the drug bust last night," Benjamin says. "Impossible to keep anything from you," Harrison says. It's just a small matter." "That's why FBI plane landed last night?" Benjamin asks. "Well, we'll have everything taken care of this morning, and the FBI people will be gone," Harrison says. "In case you haven't noticed, we've got a bigger fish to fry." He walks away from Benjamin. The fact that he knows about the FBI plane and the drug bust is upsetting to Harrison. Somewhere, there has been another breach of his orders to keep this whole thing as quiet as possible, even from his XO. In a few minutes, Captain Harrison finds himself looking out the Pacific in front of them and through the massive 180-degree semicircle bridge window of the carrier, 20 stories above the activity on the flight deck, and the 7,345 crew members in the ocean city below. Images of this life of his ship briefly begin to flash before him as pictures on a great curved window of the ship's bridge. He can see the various duties his crew members are performing now. The huge lunch being prepared in the massive kitchens of the ship. The communications room with everyone bent over various scopes watching each blip on the screen. The orangish-green color of their faces reflected from the radar scopes. The engine room and the engineers in their white uniforms with clipboards. So much different from the dirty coal-filled boiler rooms in the Titanic. The Titanic was one of his favorite books he had read. A Night to Remember, maybe five times. It was one of those first things that put more and more of his mind on the ocean rather than the land as a career for him. For there was the special seagoing captain that Joseph Conrad talks about in the book. Of course, this sea captain was Joseph Conrad. He had read most of the Conrad books when he was young. Such a strange kid he was. He was always envisioned a life in some place like a desert or an ocean. Either one, offering the blank slate environment where new life might always be created away from all the toxic noise, images, and distractions of contemporary culture and society. This was another one of those things that turned his mind toward the sea, like the Titanic book. Things and images come fast in his mind now without any attempt at making them to do this. They moved quickly and assuredly as if there was little need for conscious intervention in the moment. The next thing the captain realizes is that he is sitting in the captain's quarter and having a discussion with his son about a life in the Navy. The photo of his son above the desk has escaped from its frame and turned into a real person, and now this person is in the room, and he was having a discussion with him and trying to tell him about the life of a captain at sea. He's trying to tell his son the great things about choosing the sea over land, but suddenly he has forgotten the benefits of this memory of Conrad and the Titanic become more faded, distant, and elusive from capture. There is a sound of a breaking coffee cup as it hits the titanium floor of the bridge. A few officers immediately run over and clean it up. Benjamin has been watching Harrison for a few minutes and comes over to him. The captain seems unaware he has dropped the coffee cup. He's in another place. Benjamin sees the strange look on the face of his old friends. It is a look he has seldom seen. He knows the LSD from the coffee is taking effect. He grabs the captain's head between his hands and shakes it. "Are you okay, Captain?" Benjamin says. Captain Harrison looks at Benjamin with a slight smile on his face. His eyes are glassy, not a present in the moment. He's in another place right now, explaining something to his son in his quarters below. Benjamin helps Captain Harrison to a side area of the bridge. He motions to the same two officers who cleaned up the broken cup. "Take him to his quarters and stay with him," Benjamin says. "Make sure he doesn't leave his quarters. No one is to see him. No one is to speak with him." The two officers helped the captain off the bridge through a side door out from sight from those on the bridge. "Your first acid trip, Captain?" Benjamin says. "It'll do you good. Show you there's another world out there. A world without killing and war. A world of peace." Benjamin knows about the acid trip. He had his first trip when his life went off the rails after the Naval Academy and he became a hippie in California and experimenting with all types of drugs. But a type of rebirth led him back to the career in the Navy. Yet he never saw things the same way after his rebirth. He rose fast within the ranks, one of the fastest rising young people in the Navy during his time. It was during this time he had connected with another rising star in the Navy, his old friend from the Academy, Thomas Harrison. There are so many moments together with his old friend when Benjamin came to the Navy. A number of assignments where the two of them worked together and pulled off the impossible missions. Tommy was right, Benjamin thought. When he said there was some special magic when both of them worked together on some common mission, Benjamin wanted this mission to be one of those magic times. The plan Benjamin worked on for so many years is finally coming to fruition. A takeover of the greatest weapon in the world via soft powers of a particular drug rather than the hardened reality of nuclear war. For XO Benjamin, and many others, it seemed the only way out of the mess the modern world had gotten itself into, the path towards peace and harmony rather than the war and killing. Benjamin's top assistant, Lieutenant Eric Johnson, approaches him. Johnson has seen an assist of Benjamin for many years. "Everything's going to plan," he said as he salutes Benjamin. "So far," Benjamin says, "Bates is with the FBI now questioning the crew members in custody. They've got their story to tell them. It's enough of a distraction for us to set this big plan in operation." He watches the flight deck below where a jet readies for a takeoff and then shot down the short runway and out over the Pacific. He watches the white light of its exhaust get smaller and smaller until it disappears into the western Pacific. Benjamin comes back and takes his place behind the young man at the huge wheel of the great carrier. A few officers come up and ask where Captain Harrison is. "The captain has a little food poisoning," he says. "He retired to the quarters with his doctor. I'm in command now. The plane went haywire last night when the 10 were taken into custody, but it seems to be back on track again. The FBI was an unexpected intervention in the whole thing, but hopefully they would focus just on the 10 caught. They were trained not to say anything, but they brought the LSD aboard for themselves. The captain has been taken out, and now the investigation of the 10 crew members is underway, and lunch is quickly approaching. Captain Benjamin believes with the fervor of the religious conviction that the war is a thing of the past. He knew this somehow after the first trip on LSD. Now, his old friend, Thomas Harrison, might begin to realize this as well. He certainly wanted this realization for his old friend, wants him to finally see the world as he sees it. It is his hope and the hope of the people in the group that war might become a thing of the past, that the world might be seen in a new way. The hard power of war and killing might finally give way to the soft power of drugs. The FBI meeting. Chapter 3. Bates makes his way down to the brig of the great aircraft carrier. It is in low rent section. The brig area of the carrier is on the lower levels towards the aft section, and it's only reached through an incredible labyrinth of passageways, halls, and tunnels. He has only ventured down here a few times since being on the carrier. It always gives him a strange sensation when he goes down there, like some ground animal burrowing deeper and deeper into the earth. He wonders why he thinks of all this on his way to the brig this morning. None of this claustrophobic environment inside an aircraft carrier should surprise him. It is the way it is on all the modern aircraft carriers, always a shiny new outward appearance covering the old insides. The outside, like a great brand, the most expensive piece of equipment humanity has ever made. Outwardly, a billboard of the world's greatest nuclear carrier, Bates thinks. But even in the narrow, dim passageway of the carrier leading to the brig, Bates believes the carrier has some ultimate mission. He feels this with the fervor of the religious zealot. He has believed that he has ever since followed the captain and his command of the carrier. There seems to be some special destiny for them and that great carrier. Bates reached the big brig area of the ship and signs in with a salute from the guard on duty. He passes the 10 crew members from behind the brig. Nothing about them that would suggest all the LSD found in their room last night during the raid. 5 men and 5 women, all in their mid-20s and clean cut. It would impossible to suspect them of LSD use in a general population. Bates recognized a few of them as he passes them behind the bars of the brig. Another crewman stands at attention at another door. Bates passes through. Bates and the ship's top NCIS officer on the ship, Lieutenant Clarence Brown, a huge black man who played a tackle at Bates' alma mater, LSU, on the ship. They sit across the table from 3 FBI agents from Quantico. Bates thinks he has arrived on board the ship in possibly the fastest time possible by technology today. The agents and the investigator introduce themselves. There are 2 men and 2 women in the FBI group. All are attractive. As the old saying goes, they might have been sent by central casting. They're millennials, somewhere in their mid-30s, all with college and law degrees from the top universities. Probably they also were top sports stars in their high schools and colleges. The cream of the American crops of young people, one might say. Bates has always envied them since he was interested in joining the FBI after graduating business school. However, the FBI required a law degree and not a business degree, and Bates didn't want to go to law school for 3 years to get into the FBI. There are short introductions. The lead agent is the woman, and her name is Mandy McKay. I appreciate your work, Lieutenant Brown and Bates, for your ongoing investigation into the LSD on the carrier, she says. As you're all aware, there are a lot of drug problems in the modern military. The Navy has its share of problems, a reflection of the drug problem in our culture. In case you haven't noticed, there's an epidemic of mass hysteria through society. It affects everything, our politics, our education, our leaders, our culture, our mental perceptions and states. There's great change now in the state of the nation, and the use of LSD is on the leading edge of challenges in modern drugs. The FBI agent's name was Max continues. The Navy is a part of the modern culture today, he says. It's not separate from these problems and challenges. There have been a number of incidents of marijuana used in the ships. We've been monitoring, but it is something to be expected. What we're interested in is the increased use of LSD aboard our major ships, like this one. But why an aircraft carrier, Bates asks. Well, why not? Mandy McKay says. You live in an incredible stressful environment. We found the greatest LSD use on our highest stress warships, our carriers, and our nuclear submarines. Your drug bust last night was not that unusual. It matches other LSD busts on other key ships like this. The confrontation with the Chinese possesses some of the greatest stress in the world at this moment on this carrier, especially on this carrier, and it presents a mission leading the Pacific Fleet. It makes young people, even top Navy people, look for ways out of the stress. You know, the mission was not kept secret. All crew members knew the mission. It was the biggest thing in the news, not like those other missions where goals are usually vague. They knew the stress they were headed for. At least 10 of them decided to use LSD to break the stress. Maybe we'll find more in our investigation. You think it's a coordinated effort? Lieutenant Brown asks. More than just individual users, but something coming from some high level? An interesting question, Lieutenant, McKay says. I'm not at liberty to say much about this right now, but we believe there's an effort to introduce LSD en masse to Navy personnel. We think top people in the Navy are involved. The 10 crew members might be a part of this larger group, or they might be just a bunch of young people caught with their own LSD. So the 10 in custody might be a part of something larger, Brown asks. There's a good reason to suspect they are, says Manny McKay. I just received the text message on the way down here that your team interviewed the crew members in the brig for 2 hours this morning, Lieutenant Brown says. We considered waiting for you, McKay says, but time is of the essence in all of this, as you can understand. Well, what did you find out? Brown asks. Well, all of them are incredibly well-trained for interview sessions, she says. The FBI couldn't do any better. They all tell the same story. They are all sole users, only for themselves to blame. They had received the LSD not from someone on board, but rather took the LSD onto the ship. We've had an ongoing investigation on the ship since we left Pearl Harbor, Brown says. This is what we've come up with so far. Just sole users. There's a reason to believe that they are associated with something much larger, McKay says. We ran all of their files through the FBI match. Much more information than you have, Lieutenant Brown. Found out some unusual things in their past. All of them have background associated with psychedelics and a particular group called New Vision. It advocates a different type of psychedelic today, not your old 60s spaced out psychedelic, but, well, thought out ideas to use psychedelics for a new vision. Stuff like microdosing, that's an epidemic in Silicon Valley and New York and DC and LA. Professional psychedelics, you might say. Many members of the millennial generation are members of the New Vision group in some ways or not. It is almost like a political party today. Of course they're a danger to others on the ship, Brown says, having the crew members in the brig getting the other crew members to try LSD. Yes, perhaps a danger of the one-on-one interaction, McKay says, but this is not the way they operate. The New Vision group has teamed up with a group in the military called the New Patriots, who are trying to bring out a new vision for the Navy. They believe in introducing LSD en masse to a large population at one time. The FBI has a name for them. We call them spikers because they spike things in the world with LSD. So that it's ingested without knowing it. There have been instances where huge crowds were put under LSD at one time. It is a growing phenomenon in the culture. They don't want to wait for people to sample LSD one by one, rather give it to them all at once. So we have 10 members of the New Patriots in custody right now, Brown says. Yes, McKay says, but more than this, besides their membership in the New Patriots, they have something else in common that is very interesting. And what is that? Asks the Lieutenant Brown. They all work in the kitchen area of the ship, where 7,000 are served 3 meals a day. I know this and want to hear what you think, Mr. Brown says. Well, I've already ordered my agents to ingest the food and beverages being prepared for lunch today. I have 30 agents going through the kitchen with our instruments as I speak. We might have seized the food. I assume I have the assistance of your NCIS people on the ship, Lieutenant. Well, of course, Brown says. Good, McKay says. I have agents watching all the ways into the ship's kitchen and mess halls. I am having another team inspect all the personal belongings of the crew members with the help of our contact on the ship. They'll report to me any updates. All of this is being done as quickly and quietly as we can. I'm putting my top agents in touch with you. Agent McKay rises and extends her hands to Brown and Bates. We're setting up our command post right now, she says. We'll know something soon. She scurries off with the other agents down the dim passageway that comes into the brig. Brown makes a phone call and then heads down the passageway with Bates, an education lieutenant. Bates says to Brown, I wish to hell we had this much information when I played at LSU, Brown says. We'd be able to beat Alabama, Bates says. We don't need no damn information to beat Bama, Brown says angrily. Chapter 4. The Quiet Coop. Bates and Brown are best of friends on the ship. In the touch football game on deck, Bates is always a halfback and Brown was his blocker. No one hardly ever touched Bates in the game. Both were in rock bands in high schools and shared the same interest in music. Brown still fronts the leading rap group on the carrier. They hang out a lot at the officers' fantail club on the aft of the carrier when they're off duty. What the hell is going on? Bates asks Brown as they move through the passageways of the carrier, working their way upward towards the light and opening in the smell of the seawater. Bates' cell phone rings. It's Derek Street calling in the guard outside the captain's quarter. I thought I would tell you the captain was taken into his quarters by 2 officers 15 minutes ago, Street says. They're still in there with him. I've knocked on the door a few times and went in and checked on him. The captain seems to be in good spirits. I can't see that anything is wrong. He's rambling on and on about lots of things. The 2 officers are polite. I know one of them. They ordered me to not say anything about this to anyone. So here I am telling you this. Not even a fan of the tide. A number of things suddenly rumble around Bates' heads. Stay where you are, Bates says. I am there in 10 minutes with Brown. Jesus, he says to Clarence Brown. Things are a lot worse than we suspected. I think the captain has been given LSD. The captain's quarters, guard just called, saying that the captain was taken to the captain by 2 officers. He appears to be under the influence of LSD. Bates called McKay as the two continue upward to the hangar of the ship. I think we've been given LSD. I think they've given the captain LSD, he says. He seems okay, but Lieutenant Brown and I are on our way over to check on him. No, don't do this, Agent McKay says. We don't want to show our hand. I want to see both of you right now, McKay says. I have something to show you I think will be of interest. A few minutes later, Bates and Brown sat across from Agent McKay in the command center the FBI had set up. It is in this area of the aft section of the carrier for visitors to the ship. There's a number of bedrooms and a large common workroom. McKay sits in the corner area directing things on her cell phone. Bates and Brown sit down at her desk. This all makes sense, Bates tells McKay. I think they got to him by spiking his morning coffee. I left right after he got it, but it was an unusual in that it was served to him by a new person. That never happens. It's always the same insane, serving him the coffee each morning. The captain knows him, and they talk and they joke about it for a few minutes. This morning, a new guy brought the coffee and went off. I left right after that for our meeting. I don't know what happened after this. That puts the captain's XO, William Benjamin, in command of the ship, she says. Yes, says Bates. Mandy McKay extracts a file from a number of files on the table. The name William Benjamin is in a large block letters. It's not surprising, she says. We've had him under investigation for some time now. Harrison and Benjamin are an odd couple, old friends who have been gone different ways in life. I suppose you know about Benjamin's checkered past with drugs? Well, yes, Bates says. There's definitely a love-hate relationship between them. I've never trusted anything about Benjamin. Benjamin can't know we suspect him, McKay says. Our story is that the LSD was confined to just the tin and we're heading back soon. You've got to convince him of this. Go to the brig and tell Benjamin everything is fine with the FBI. Tell him we're satisfied. We got all involved with the LSD ring on the ship. Say nothing about their connection to the kitchen. He can't suspect anything. It's going to be hard playing up to that bastard for sure, Brown says. We will continue at Chapter 5 in some later episodes. This short story is a little bit longer than a short story looks like, but it sounds very interesting. I can't imagine being on a naval ship with a bunch of people tripping on LSD, especially one of them being the captain. That just kind of blows my mind. So I will continue this story on another episode, and we will go from there. So I'm going to wrap this episode up. I will tell you, thank you for those of you that hang around and listen to these. They're fun. They get my energy out. They get my brain kind of clear. And it tickles me to know that you guys sit and listen to me just rambling on with some of this stuff. So I really, really appreciate that. Again, like this video. Click the subscribe. I need to get our channels up and get them more active and going. So with that being said, I hope the rest of this week is good. I will be leaving Kansas the morning of Thursday the 14th. So if you remember that and you think about me, just send me some vibes, send me some travel vibes. Need them all, get, you know, anything and everything helps. Just travel mercies for us, just to make sure we get up there. Other than that, I think I'm going to wrap this up, and I'm going to tell you folks, I enjoy all of you. Thank you for listening, and keep ascending, friends.